The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This is Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level with Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler. Keith and Jonathan each have over 25 years spearheading business transformation programs for Fortune 1000 companies. Keith Koo is an expert on marketing and advertising, risk management, and risk mitigation. Jonathan Ziegler's background is in enterprise sales, management consulting, and marketing. Together, they're the managing partners of Guardian Insight Group, leveraging the diverse knowledge in industries such as technology, financial services, fintech, healthcare, energy, and retail. And they're here to help you break out from your current mindset, make a revolutionary shift in your business goals, and achieve greater success. Now, your hosts for Guardian Insights, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level. I'm your host, Keith Koo, and in the studio with me today is Jonathan Ziegler, and together we're the co-managing partners of Guardian Insight Group. Our firm specializes in helping companies think about risk whenever they think about disruption.
So thanks, Keith. You know, one of the things that we've been talking about the last couple of weeks is this whole disrupt or die consideration with Jedediah Yue with his book. And I want us to kind of spend a little bit of time on some of the discussions that we've already had and some of the previous shows that we've talked about different areas or ideas around disruption and what that means to the average business executive here in Silicon Valley and perhaps around the world, because I don't think it's that much different. But tell me a little bit, you know, from your perspective of where you see Jed's book and why it's so important. And by the way, I think you had some news about where that book is actually standing right now.
Right. So we had Jedediah Yue on our show last week, and he had brought forth his new book, Disrupt or Die. And what was interesting is Jed, we had talked about his background in starting a company called Avamar before the age of 30, selling it for $165 million to EMC, which subsequently got bought by Dell, and then how he's the current founder and chairman of another Silicon Valley company called Delphix, which data management. Jed wanted to impart all of his years of knowledge and frameworks and put into a book that, you know, I felt was going to make him the next Jim Collins, who is the author of Good to Great, a popular management book that I still love. But Jed was just talking about how the times have changed. So Jed's book, when I last spoke to him, is number one on Amazon's bestseller for books on innovation. Mm-hmm. So we'd like to congratulate Jed for a great job in that and all the folks that support him in that. And it's on the top 50 Amazon bestsellers.
Yeah, absolutely. And we still have the link up on our homepage at gigsv.biz to link to it directly on Amazon. So if you're interested, and also if you haven't had the opportunity to listen to that, we have that available as a podcast, the conversation with Jedediah Yue and this whole disrupt or die launch. And it was a really interesting conversation from my perspective because, one, he's an extremely intelligent man. Two, he's had this experience of launching. This is Delphix was actually his third company. Is that right? That he's effectively launched.
Right.
And, yeah. So he's had a lot of experience. And as I looked at this, I actually think the book is more like a master class or even an MBA level class, and something that any entrepreneur or any business executive may want to pick up and read, simply because even if you don't want to go through the entire process, there's a lot of wisdom in there that you can apply or impart to your teams today.
Yeah. I mean, last time I checked, I think there were over 50 reviews on Amazon.com, people writing about his book. I wrote a review for it, and I'd say like 99% were 5-star reviews. So.
Yeah. I got the same impression. So obviously that's one of our topics of conversation, you know, the last couple of weeks, and it's an important piece of this puzzle. But, you know, talking about where we are, where Guardian Insight Group stands and how we advise our customers and our clients, this is one of the pieces of the puzzle. There are, you know, all sorts of things we've talked about. We've talked about vendor risk. We've talked about risk mitigation, mergers and acquisitions, cyber threats and cyber risks, all sorts of different areas that have become everyday news. You know, the Wall Street Journal, the USA Today, local news and national news have been picking up all sorts of different pieces of these puzzles. Let me ask you from your perspective, Keith, you know, where are we seeing the next couple of months as far as the holiday season coming up for retailers and, you know, the beginning of the year with tax preparation and tax planning and the cyber risks around that that could potentially be coming up? What do you feel like the average, you know, business person needs to be worried about, or what might keep them awake for the next couple of months?
It's a good question. And unfortunately, I think as we're progressing as a society, as we're, you know, technology is rapidly changing, unfortunately, we're concerned about more and more things. I'll let you know that in the banking world, when we talk about risk management, we look at all areas of risk, right? We look at what we call operational risk, which includes things like cybersecurity and business continuity, which is whether or not your organization or your company will still run. And we use the term in business continuity called business unusual. So that's the whole concept that you have to plan for when incidents occur. So for instance, the terrible fires raging in Napa and Sonoma right now, those would be considered rare events. And therefore, you're planning for, you know, they say 100-year floods, 1,000-year floods. Well, look at what's happened in just the U.S. in the last couple of months. We've had a couple of 1,000-year floods.
Right.
And again, I think that whether you talk about Malcolm Gladwell's tipping point, the things that Jed had mentioned in his book around as complex organism societies continue to grow, this is where people, I think, start to lose sight of all the risks that are just compounding. Because as technology is increasing exponentially, the risks are as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And I think that's one of those key challenges that the average business executive needs to consider. So when we come back, let's continue this conversation. Are we in the realm of where we need to be as far as what a technology provides, what a technology risk situation looks like, what a challenge might look like for a business executive? I'm way too early, aren't I? Yeah. Okay. My bad. I thought about that. All right. So let's take a step back. So, Keith, you were talking a lot about how risk management and risk mitigation are critical issues for the business individually and as an executive or a board level consideration. Let's talk a little bit about that, because we've had Nir Geist from Neotron on the show as well, and he's talked about how traditional cyber security has become kind of more than just obsolete. It's becoming a day-to-day realistically an emergency situation for a lot of companies out there. And with the Equifax breach that we've talked about pretty much at length, and the Deloitte risk or the Deloitte breach that's come into play, what's going to happen in the next, say, 5 to 7 years, if we could, you know, put our own conjecture on this, when a company gets into a situation like this? I mean, what are the risks? There's the risk to our children with their identities from the Equifax consideration, and then this Neotron piece. You know, we've talked a lot about how people need to change their mindset. What do you think?
Well, it's a great point. I think we're thinking about the risk dimensions from what we'll call stakeholders, right? So if we think about the business owner, the corporate executive, they are under a lot of pressure to find the right solution, because as we discussed before, being a chief information security officer, a CISO right now, is a very hot seat to be in, and one with very short longevity, especially when something like an Equifax breach or Deloitte breach happens. They're the first people you look to, whether they're responsible or not. They're the ones automatically identified with that problem. And I can tell you, at the conferences I speak at the forums I'm a part of, I know for a fact that more and more money is being invested in cybersecurity. We had talked before about how $90 billion is being spent on what we call endpoint security. So things that almost any respected company is already investing in to keep themselves safe. And their processes are getting better, But this is, again, exponential change, disruption. Whether we're talking about Judd's book or not, it's happening. And the criminals are also being disruptive because they're adopting technologies faster. I mean, Nier, Geist, the CTO of Neutron, he hacked his first system at 8 years old.
Right.
And we were talking about how it's not uncommon for, at this point, you're pretty old, a 17-year-old, to hack into a very sophisticated system. And so from the stakeholder of the companies, the organizations who need to protect the company, they need to – the industry needs advanced technologies that, you know, to use Steve Jobs' term, think differently. Mm-hmm. And we know that there's a number of companies, not just Neutron, that are all trying to adopt the latest and greatest and to stay one step ahead of the – of the criminals. But there, you know, we talked about an infinite number of threat vectors. So what really does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a really interesting point from the perspective of changing the approach to how security is addressed is the important approach to this. It's not just going down the status quo. We had used the example of the alarm company at the home, you know, having an ADT or something like that in control. But the fact that it is ADT, it's a known entity to the bad guys. And if the bad guys see the sign in your yard, yeah, they might not. The typical less capable bad guy might walk past your house and go to the one that doesn't have the sign.
So let's, again, remind folks, you can reach Guardian Insight Group at 1-888-388-6739 or gigsv.biz. That's gigsv.biz. Reach out to us to talk about how to secure your business.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-388-OPEX. That's 888-388-OPEX. 888-388-OPEX. Now, back to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level. Once again, your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome back to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level. I'm your host, Keith Koo, and in studio with me today is my co-host, Jonathan Ziegler. And we're still on the topic about risk and disruption, which, again, I think being here in Silicon Valley, lots of companies are flying fast. We talk a lot about how with innovation, there are rocket builders, and these rocket builders are going at light speed, and sometimes they're not really thinking about all the risks of doing business.
Well, Keith, do you think that this is one of those challenges where, and I'm not trying to knock anybody, but do you think this is one of those things where they say it's my ego, or it's not the ego, but it's the ego talking, where they don't care because they know that somebody will be back in the behind the scenes to clean up the mess or pick up the pieces? Or is this legitimately, I'm moving so fast that regulation will have to change to keep up with me rather than the other way around? I mean, I realize there's entrepreneurs out there who believe that they are the, you know, the gift, so to speak, and that they should be allowed to do whatever they need to do.
Well, it's an interesting phenomenon, and we will refer to them as unicorns. So whether unicorns in Silicon Valley or unicorns in China or France, these are companies with theoretically $1 billion or more valuation.
Right.
And these are companies like Airbnb, like Uber, like companies that really have flown very high and very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And again, without making any accusations, there's just this thought that some of these companies may be skirting regulations or sidestepping regulations.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important perspective, especially for a company that's not necessarily publicly traded yet. You know, we've seen a lot of public boardroom discussions or battles, if you want to call them that, especially fairly recently with a couple of these unicorns, in addition to some of the investment people who've been involved as well. You know, there's disparity, and I think there's a challenge to the status quo or the ordinary belief that, again, you're talking about a company that has over $1 billion in valuation, but yet they're not even close to going public. So where does that situation become untenable? From our perspective, I mean, this is one of those challenges that we deal with our clients with quite a bit.
Well, I think the only differentiation about being untenable, it by design is an untenable situation, but you have groups of folks, investments, you have stakeholders who care very much in the success of that entity and their underlying business model. So without going too much into those companies, because they're well-funded and they're large and whatever happens, happens with regards to future regulations and laws, that's really the point. So you're now an entrepreneur and you're going to be the next one of these unicorns, or you hope to be. You're thinking, hey, they were able to get as far as they did without thinking about, again, laws and regulations and compliance, and maybe we can do that as well. So I think we've had a period where that hasn't been such, I shouldn't say such a big deal, this just hasn't been a focus for either themselves or the investment communities that back them, whether it's VCs or angels, what have you.
So there's a lot of money sitting on the sidelines still, though, because these challenges, well, maybe in spite of these challenges, right? There's money involved, but there's also the consideration that maybe it's such a disruptive technology or a disruptive approach to a new product or a new solution that maybe we're going to get by without not having to adhere to or, you know, capitulate at some point. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. And I think we see the history of, again, just using regulations. And let's just focus on banking for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
Banking regulations often vacillate with, you know, who is the top regulator in the land, the mm-hmm. Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, and what are on people's minds or the government's minds. So in 2007, 2008, we had the mortgage crisis, and we had a whole new slew of regulations related to protecting customers, even beyond the scope of what had been on the books already.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're talking about the Equifax breach, the Deloitte breach, where Congress themselves, in a lot of cases, were victims of those breaches, and so they care a lot. And so where we were at a point, unbelievably, that right before the Equifax breach occurred, the credit reporting agency's lobbyists were trying to, in essence, get rid of any regulation that they'd have to adhere to because they're not banks.
Right.
Suddenly, it's going to go the other way around. And so where this ties into, We've spoken a few times about the European Union enacting a new regulation called the GDPR.
Yeah.
And it's just a very all-encompassing regulation that doesn't care about where you operate. It cares about where the European citizen is doing business in. So, for example, you're an EU citizen from France and you want a mortgage in the United States, you want a credit card in the United States. Well, Equifax would have been liable or beholden to that regulation, but it doesn't go into effect until May of next year.
Right.
So now what we're saying is regulations are going to happen quicker now because the public outcry is so mounting in regards to losing their privacy. And because of the Equifax breach, I say with certainty that within the next 18 months, we're going to have a very similar regulation to GDPR here.
So this is an interesting conversation, and I think something that we need to kind of capitalize on a little bit, because the reality is that it's not just necessarily the members of Congress who we know potentially got breached. It's about their kids and their grandkids, right? Because that's the bigger part of this issue that not a whole lot of people are focusing on. The privacy piece is one thing, but it's the fact that potentially your kids and my kids have had their Social Security numbers compromised, or they're out there. And that's going to jeopardize their ability to potentially get credit or a mortgage down the road, or a car loan for that matter. That's a big deal.
Right. And the implications are you know, vast and almost overwhelming. If you read Jed's entire book, he talks a lot about the frameworks and models around disruption. And so what's happening in essence is also disrupting government and the regulatory
Yeah, the traditional way that things are decided on or the challenges that are being approached from a regulatory perspective in the traditional sense of government law creation.
Yeah, so think of this. Think about how a breach like Equifax really shines the light on top of the previous breaches around Anthem in healthcare, that we cannot keep up with the rate of change, that we as a population, as a global society, that the criminals are advancing
way
too fast.
And so, way ahead of us.
So we're going to have new technologies come up specifically to combat these challenges, and we're going to have new regulations that come up. And even these regulations will require new technologies as well.
Mm-hmm. So what are you talking about, Keith? I mean, are these like, are you talking about like blockchain? Is that one of those considerations? Or are you talking about Bitcoin? Are you talking about other areas and avenues? Is that what you're getting at?
Well, yeah, blockchain definitely, which is a distributed ledger. Blockchain gets a lot of press, but really what blockchain is, most people have heard it so far in its first application, it's called Bitcoin, which is a cryptocurrency. But blockchain in itself is a way, is a technology that a lot of industries are now adopting to in theory, secure themselves better than before. And when we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about how companies go about doing that.
So, again, this is one of those situations where a new technology or a new approach to a technology has become something that is very de facto or de rigueur. It's the talk of the day. So Guardian Insight Group helps companies interpret whether this is a risk or a challenge or something that really will help them. The best way for you to get engaged with us is give us a call, 888-388-6739. That's 1-888-388-OPEX. Or reach out to us on our website at gigsv.biz. That's gigsv.biz. And we'll be back shortly.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-388-OPEX. That's 888-388-OPEX. 888-388-OPEX. Now, back to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level. Once again, your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome back to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level. I'm your host, Keith Koo, with my co-host, Jonathan Ziegler. In our last segment, we were just getting into how lots of things are being disrupted, especially in regards to one of the push factors on the breaches we've heard from Equifax and from Deloitte. And we were getting to how new technologies are required to help safeguard us from those types of breaches. We had just started talking about blockchain. And just so you know, we'll be focusing our next episode specifically on blockchain and some of the uses around that with Doug Park of Park and DeBage, who's an expert on all things related to regulatory matters and the blockchain. So whether it's initial coin offering or whether it's Bitcoin or Ethereum, Doug's an expert on that. So blockchain, what we're getting to is that it is being considered in lots of use cases with next generation technologies to be that securing force.
So how does a company, you know, bring a blockchain to bear internally? How do they really get into the call it the rigor that's required to actually incorporate what blockchain is supposed to do?
Well, this is where I think up until now, when we talk about the technology world, there is, in essence, groups of folks that are really pretenders, right? So there are, you know, we've been using this analogy a lot. There are rocket builders and rocket riders. It's the same thing happens in technology groups internal to corporations. There are people who know how to maintain a system. So if I installed an IBM mainframe from 40 years ago, there are still legacy folks who know how to run that mainframe.
Right.
If I installed an Oracle ERP system 20 years ago, there are people who know how to maintain that ERP system. If I installed a Cisco network 15 years ago, there are people who know how to maintain that. But with the advancement of criminals and what they could do, there's just no way with an infinite amount of threat vectors that they can keep up with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was one of those conversations that we had with Nir at Neutron, is that, you know, the traditional approach to looking at what a cybersecurity solution looks like today is just addressing the same old, which is those threat vectors that you just described, which could be infinite. Whereas their approach, for example, is we know that the bad guys are going to get into your network. What we're trying to prevent is exfiltration of data.
Right. And you have all these great companies. I mean, these companies, these technology companies are behemoths and have been the birthing grounds of many other great companies, technology or otherwise. But all of them have to protect their platform and in some cases legacy products. And so when we talk about disruption for both criminals and for customers, people are just going around these systems now. They're just finding ways to not even worry about them. They're exploiting vulnerabilities that have persisted and have been sleeping for many years, not by any fault of these companies. It's just the way that these products are architected.
Well, it's the same thing. I mean, let's just talk about how the Equifax senior leadership, you know, they believed that they had closed that vulnerability at one point, the one that caused the breach, because they were told that it was closed, right? And that's a typical chain of command consideration, right? So an executive may not have a choice but to believe in his or her underlings that they've done everything that they possibly could to ensure that they've protected their data as well as their customer data. And we've talked about this a little bit more at length in our previous shows, where the problem is that you and me as the consumer are not Equifax's customers. So they don't care necessarily about our data. But their customers, like the credit card companies and the home mortgage companies and the car loan companies and the banks, their customers are the ones that have to kind of raise the ire here, not us. And so it's a kind of, as we alluded to in our last segment, Congress and our you know, illustrious lawmaking body have to figure out how we regulate this now moving forward. And as you alluded to also, that we're going to have a GDPR-like segment or GDPR-like regulation and maybe in the next 12 to 18 months, if not sooner.
Right. And this is really not meant to be an indictment on companies or how they run their businesses. It's just things are changing rapidly and they have to be aware of that. And so I think what happens is you get these installed teams, embedded teams that have been managing these systems for many, many years, or even if they're new leadership. What happens when new leadership comes in? So let's say like in Equifax, you've now seen the CISO, Chief Information Security Officer, leave the company. It creates a void in leadership. New leaders, it takes time to hire a new leader. It takes time to for the new leader to understand what their environment consists of, what technologies they're being used, and yet still more and more pervasive threats are occurring every day.
Right.
A firm like ours is going to go in and do basically a failure analysis on what you've currently got. We look at your systems, we look at your processes, we look at your people, and we're here to help point out things that you can improve upon.
Yeah, it's a deep dive forensic level consideration, and I think it's something that we've gotten really good at in the last several years from the standpoint of being able to know what to look for as well as with the new threats that are coming down the pike. And this isn't just around cybersecurity. This is around risk mitigation in all aspects, financial risk, customer exposure risk, data risk. You know, this is everything from the top to bottom, and this could be deep and wide or it could be horizontal. And I think that's one of the things that we have to, vertical. And I think that's one of the things that we have to make sure that we understand when we come in. We give you, the executive or the board, especially the board level considerations around what your expectations are for stakeholder viability and stakeholder support. And this is important because typically, at least from what we're experiencing, the board may not necessarily have as clear a picture of what the executive level considerations are or what the day-to-day operational level looks like deeper down. And that's something that we like to bring to light in the risk review is realistically looking at, if you're not doing these couple of items or not doing these processes the right way, you guys are at risk and the board becomes responsibility to the stakeholders. So, you know, tell us a little bit about that, Keith, you know, from your perspective.
Well, I think to answer that question, we have to look back to what we've been talking about with different types of organizations. Let's start off first with the regulatory landscape. And because we look at banks, we look at insurance companies, and we look at healthcare, there is a difference with the amount of regulation each of these industries has. I can't tell you how many times we argue with companies who believe they're regulators because they're in one of these verticals, but then not realizing that, you know, ultimately, I think that U.S. banks have one of the highest bars to reach, almost crushing in the sense of how many regulations they have to adhere to. Not saying that's good. I'm just saying that it's complex, and it's the banking regulators try to be as complete as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So then when you talk to an industry, and I can't point out specifically which one for, you know,
obvious reasons.
Yeah, obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But let's just say you are involved with keeping people alive. Really, it's important to keep people alive, but you're still not as regulated. I think the only thing probably more regulated than a bank would be like a nuclear reactor, right? The nuclear industry is probably more regulated than a bank in terms of what we call testing and controls. And so what we're trying to educate groups on is there are different levels of regulation.
Right.
And in some cases, because in banking, we're dealing with money, we're dealing with financial fraud, we're dealing with things that are significant, it is to a higher degree than others. And so we're trying to point out to companies, not that they should adopt what banks do, but they should understand that they might have a blind spot.
Well, I think it's a level of being either in the group of mediocrity or elevating to the next level, which we talk about as, you know, our business day to day. That's an important function of this goal that we have, which is to help our customers not only see the risk, but figure out how they mitigate it and figure out how they can then turn their business processes around so that they can avoid it in the future, even with new technologies and new threats and new areas of unknown, like we talked about before, the unknown considerations that are out there.
And I think an uncomfortable topic that we were talking about, you know, why would a board care or why would senior leadership care? I think because of the crushing nature of regulations in any industry, mm-hmm. going back to any industry, there is this thought, you know, true or not true, that plausible deniability is a big deal.
I hate to say that, but I hear that all the time in our area of expertise. It is without a doubt one of the single biggest cop-outs, if I can say that. And I'm not trying to put anybody on the spot, but I just simply say that if you're a leader or a board member and you haven't looked very seriously at whether plausible deniability is a rational deniable, you know, it's an excuse, but people use it every day. And to me, that's just the wrong way to run even a private enterprise, but certainly a publicly traded enterprise.
So in the news, one of Japan's largest steel companies just announced, I won't name which one it is, but just announced that they have been committing institutional fraud for, I think, 30 or 40 years. And
wow.
So the quality of their steel is so poor, but the fraud was to the level, the magnitude such that it was actually codified in their instruction manuals to their employees.
Oh, my goodness.
And so, again, we have some institutional things we're talking about, and this is where our firm really helps customers. We're actually helping you, again, not naming any names, we're helping you understand your risk posture and whether these things have happened or not.
Yeah. So when we come back, we'll kind of continue this conversation. But again, to get in touch with Guardian Insight Group, reach out to us at our toll-free number 1-888-388-6739 or gigsv.biz, gigsv.biz. And we'll be back shortly.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-388-OPEX. That's 888-388-OPEX. 888-388-OPEX. Now, back to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level. Once again, your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome back to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level. I'm Keith Koo, your host, with Jonathan Ziegler, my co-host. And in our last segment, we were just touching upon why is it so difficult for companies to adopt these new practices and secure themselves when they have a business running.
So I've got a question for you, Keith, along those lines. And I'm not saying that we have clients that do this, but I'm just going to use this as an example. I have heard rumor of certain C-level executives at certain publicly traded companies simply stating, I don't care about that particular challenge or that particular risk because it's not going to directly impact me. Maybe it's a technology decision. Maybe it's choosing a commercially available software versus open source as an example. But I don't care. Why should I be worried about it? Why does that have any impact on my business?
Well, I think it's a good point you make. And again, there are several different stakeholders involved, even within the C community, right? C-level community.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to what we had just talked about last segment. There's a Japanese company who has institutionalized fraud, and it's turned out that maybe 30 or 40 years they've been selling their customers inferior quality steel, and it's to the point that's so egregious that it was codified in their actual employee handbook.
Unbelievable.
And then we think about, I believe it was almost 2 years ago, Japan had their largest ever corporate scandal with Toshiba.
Right.
And that they were actually falsifying sales information for at least 5 or 6 years.
Right.
And so what's happening, though, is there's the good guys. There's the people out to commit fraud. But again, what people don't realize is as technology is increasing and increasing at a faster pace, their ability to commit fraud also gets unmasked, so to speak.
Sooner, or does it just happen in a faster cycle?
Much sooner. So let's go back to what we had just talked about on the concept of blockchain. So we had first talked about blockchain being a distributed ledger, really just simply based on accounting principles. and now codified digitally and virtually impossible to hack. And we'll talk about that more in our next episode. But being virtually impossible to hack, let's say that as companies are adopting blockchain for their internal purposes, not just external purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So where we talked about banks were very reticent to adopt Bitcoin as a medium of exchange, as a cryptocurrency. But every large bank is trying to figure out how they can use blockchain to secure their customers.
Right.
So as more blockchain technologies get adopted, you've got the concern that the companies using that blockchain technology should know what they're doing in regards to the law and compliance in each of the countries they're at. But now you're a C-level executive not close to the wheel of how your technology is advancing internally, and suddenly you may be unmasked unknowingly, whether you're outright committing fraud or not, because blockchain's now in your environment.
So again, let's take this a step back. We're not talking about a blatant fraud situation. It may happen as a byproduct of something, but we're not talking about a blatant situation, as I was trying to allude to with my example. I'm more interested in, again, this is kind of, it seems like it's an ego-driven thing, because I know best because I was hired by this company as the expert. In whatever capacity, if it's CISO or CIO or CFO or whatever the case may be, or the board has actually tapped me because I have the expertise. And yet, again, like I said, I don't care per se about one aspect of this or several aspects of this because it interferes with my ability to get my job done day to day.
You know, a little bit tongue in cheek, because we were just talking about plausible deniability. What I'm suggesting and what I'm reading is that even plausible deniability will be automated away.
How's that going to happen? That's a very intriguing point.
It's going to happen because the more and more things that require the government to have regulatory controls, the more and more those technologies emerge, the more and more people adopt those technologies and build it into their process.
So it's a cycle. It's a vicious cycle to me. And that's one of those considerations where I think there's going to be an entrepreneur who's going to create a solution to that in and of itself, right? Because that's, let's call it AI or machine learning, where everything gets a little bit more able to understand what the next five chess moves might be and prevents that from actually becoming part of the game, so to speak.
And we know this because we speak to a lot of companies trying to solve for that.
Right. So how does that translate to what do I do? You know, this is one of those situations where, you know, we've had conversations with multinational companies and we've had conversations with small startups where, you know, what do I do?
Well, I think, again, we say this is a stop, drop, and roll moment. You know, living in California with earthquakes, this is where it's very important to be cognizant that you have to be fully active and participating in your business.
Okay.
And that is an engagement with a company like ours to understand what you've created so far, whether your processes are sound and whether it would stand up to this technological change.
Or regulation, as the case may be, if it's a situation where they're in a regulated industry or they're getting into a situation where they may be regulated further.
Yeah, it's all together now. That's what we're saying. The reason why a Japanese company would be outed after 30, 40 years of institutional fraud is because their systems and controls caught up.
Right. Well, it's the same thing with DNA evidence. Let's just be blunt, you know, in the criminal justice realm. So what do we do now? What's the next step? We've got an upcoming show on blockchain and Bitcoin and the ICO market. What else is coming up down the road?
Well, I think what's coming up down the road is now. So the episode we're having on blockchain and ICOs is all about how as these emerging technologies are coming up, they're bypassing traditional companies completely, but they still need that help with regulatory consideration or legal consideration overall.
Mm-hmm.
And working with companies like Guardian Insight Group and our partners like the law firm we'll have on next week, Park and DeBage, is about how to make sure you adopt these technologies in the correct fashion.
Well, that's a very good point, Keith. And if you'd like more information on Guardian Insight Group, get us on the web at gigsv.biz. That's gigsv.biz. Or call us at 1-888-388-6739. That's 1-888-388-OPEX, and we'll look forward to having you join us again next time.
You've been listening to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level with Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler. For questions or comments about today's program, call 1-888-388-OPEX. That's 888-388-OPEX. And be sure to listen again next week at this time for more Guardian Insights right here on this station.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.